Hey guys, Casal here. You're about to watch Thorin talk and talk and talk. But it's kind of good, I swear.
Now you might naively think that if I use Gamersops, one of the companies I promote, to banter B-Mass, who's just been benched, you might naively think, right, I'll just do some sort of angle like, oh, you know, it'll give him the energy to grind in FPL and got on a new team, or, you know, I'm sure he's feeling a bit down, it can perk him up. But nah, I'm not going to do that angle because that would just be rude. And I don't want to just be rude. I want to be really rude. So what I'll say instead is, I think he should actually try Gamersubs so he can get the energy to pick himself up off the floor and jog on down to the unemployment office. Get a job, loser. Loser. What a loser. Get a job, loser. Get a job. A job. Oh, sorry, is that not a funny to keep saying that over and over again? Zoom is a lot. You all thought that was hilarious, right? That's the thing, by the way. If you're a pro out there and you're like, oh, how can he do it? How can he mock the fact he is unemployed and in a hard point? It's like, oh, you mean like you guys mock my integrity and try to imply that I don't even have a job and that I'm bad at my job and everything about me is negative and I'm even a fundamentally evil human being? Well, you know what? You put all that on the table. So now it's on the table. All of you that put it there, I'm coming at your head. And when you get fired and when you have a bad thing happen to you in your life, in that particular context, you've just given me carte blanche to do whatever I want. So you know what, B-Mass? I'd suggest you tried the flavour dragon fruit punch. Because you know what? I know a lot of this isn't associated with your career because it didn't really drag on, did it? I mean, I know you were bad, but you weren't really in the team that long. Fruit, that's a delicious, sweet thing that when a human finds, they want to consume. Unlike your career or any of your teams apparently wanted you. You're just there to be kicked out, mate. And then punch. Well, I bet it was a punch to the gut when those mouse guys, that cyclone guy, well, you know what, B-Mass? It's been real, bro. We really appreciate you as a player, and I would recommend any organisation picks you up and works with you, except mine. I'll never work with you. I'd rather have literally anyone. Oh, someone who's never played at Tier 1, get him in there instead of B-Mass. B-Mass! You know what? B-Mass would be a better name than B-Mass, except the problem is it contains the word mass, which in Spanish means more, and you won't be getting any more in mouse, will you? I could do this all day long, mate. So, okay, here we are. By the way, code Thorin, THRRIN, for 10% off your order at gamersups.gg. Now that you don't have an income, you broke bitch. Right, let's get on with the AMA, shall we? Now, as a random detail, obviously, it's up in the air how many of these I do in a month or if I do one in a month. So if anyone back in the day was a Patreon subscriber, and you were at the $10 tier or above, and you didn't get to ask a question ever, or whatever, you didn't submit them, or you just never saw the documents, etc. If you just send me one now, even though you're not actually a subscriber anymore, don't worry, I can check all this stuff in the backlogs. Just send me a message on Patreon with a question, and I'll chuck it in a future one, maybe if it's good. So let's get on with it. As usual, at the end of this video, there'll be the thread where you can submit the next questions. Right, Bean Burrito says, I asked this question a while ago, not sure if it ever made it into a video, so here it is again, cheers. Now, I searched a few of the most recent ones, I couldn't find this question. I will say this, if that means you just never watched the videos and you're just submitting it, that is obnoxious, mate. Like, if it turns out that this actually was a question from the past, ooh, like, I won't say, like, you're banned or something. That's like a strike right there, mate. That's one thing where I'm going to have to think twice. Because I ain't answering questions twice and just going into it in some ridiculous fashion. Because you're too lazy. The fact that you say you asked it and I didn't ask it, that implies I thought it was a rubbish question. Or I have indeed answered it, but just so far ago. So don't be like that, mate. So here's the question. At least I'll try doing it in a different way this time. What caused each of the dominant, but not necessarily era-possessing teams in CSGO history to fall off? Who or what stopped each from ruling forever? Right, so the tricky part here is the abstract version is all the reasons, but I mean, he wants specifics. Now, what we'll do is I'll give you the abstract because it'll cover all cases generally, and then we'll try a few specifics. But obviously, this video, this alone could be its own video, and it could be like a 20, 40, an hour long video, right? There's so much you could do with it. It could even be like one of those videos where you have guests or something. So here's the thing. Actually, this particular question, I've hinted at in the past, but I will have some forthcoming, let's just say side/separate areas where I'm expanding out my channel and my content. And one of the areas I'm going to include, and it will come back to this Patreon, see what I'm doing there, is going to be that feature I've mentioned many times. It's time to do it. It's time to have one of the Patreon tiers. Maybe it'll be the $75 tier or something I'll put in. And everyone who's on that tier will also get the chance to vote. Maybe it'll be less. I don't know. I'll have to think about it. It'll be a chance to... I'll pick like two or three of these that I think are good questions, but I'd rather do like a whole video on it. And then you'll vote which of the three I do, for example, or four or whatever. So this is one actually that might be a good candidate for that. I'll just do it briefly. So in terms of the abstract... as a general question, not specific to each team, I would say what happens is your style gets less effective over time, just because people have played against it, they've seen the ins and outs of it, they've seen your execution, they've seen its best and its worst, they've just got familiar with it. So you have to reinvent yourself, update your playbook, figure out what the other person's doing, get ahead of it. If you don't do those things, it's very rare teams ever did. In my opinion, the only team that truly did in history was Astralis, out of these dominant teams. And even then, they had the breaks and the Astralis period, so I think some of that was even a little bit of wiggle room finessing. But aside from that, most of them didn't update and reinvent. In fact, if you look, a lot of the great cores in history, you'll notice, just kept playing that same style, often with similar teammates, for the rest of their careers, 3-4 years, and just kept running into that brick wall over and over and over again. Then obviously, because you play against people with your style so much, eventually a style comes along that counters it, and that has enough familiarity to counter it and to consistently counter it, and now you're just losing over and over and over again. That's why, by the way, Fnatic 2015 is so impressive, because they continually kept losing to the TSM style and players, but then overall still had the era, still won the majors, still won the big tournaments, and just lost a few of the smaller / medium ones. That's just unbelievable greatness, because that should have been the end of your career, era rather. Then there's obviously the scrutiny. You become the number one team. Everyone studies your demos. Everyone becomes familiar with it. Everyone wants to scrim you. There's burnout, obviously. Not only are you going super hard when you're on top and you're winning, understandably, but because you're making finals all the time, semi-finals all the time, that's going to burn you out in and of itself and make your window a little bit more reduced. Ego and attitude, like obviously people get stubborn with their playing style. They think they know best, like Happy. You get people who get arrogant, think they can't lose. The Fnatic players could maybe be in there. I would also say a classic one for me is sort of meta theory, which is recruitment. I think what happens is when you have a strength that just becomes too obvious after a while, people start recruiting amongst your peers specifically to match up against your strength and shore up their weakness. So, for example, an obvious example recently would be, that's why I think you got all these massive power play moves coming into this year from the G2s, the Vitalities of the world, because they wanted to match up with Na'Vi, and Na'Vi just had unbeatable firepower. So you had to at least feel like you got in the game firepower-wise, then you could beat them in other regards. So, okay, there's the abstracts, but let's do a few of the teams in history. So, like I say, the envious teams of Happy mainly fell off, because they really tried to ride Force Buy and buying those OP pistols and using skill and gimmicky play. They just tried to ride that to more and more and more and more championships, and eventually even skilled couldn't get it done overall. Also, I think also that you had some players have slumps, and then eventually they just didn't believe in Happy, and the whole squad somewhat fractured, even though it stayed together for like, what, 6 months, a year at that point in time. So there's one. Like, he did break the meta, but then he didn't understand his meta then became a meta that then got broken by something else. So I think that was an obvious one. For Fnatic, I think part of it was individual play. I think part of it was chemistry. I think that they broke apart because people were burned out and people had some minor personality conflicts potentially. And I think coming back together was just because it didn't work out in the other teams. And they thought, right, oh, it's brilliant, but we're in the old team. And I think they didn't realize that time had passed. I even think they got way more out of it than they should have by having the Dennis period right after the Pronax period. Astralis, the dominant team. The thing is, they were looking bad at the beginning of 2020, but it was only obviously those first couple of tournaments. So, like, I think they could have bounced back. I don't really... I think essentially the online era killed them, and, like, the whole shenanigans of what started to happen with the org and the contracts, and they were trying to sell them, or are they trying to sell them? We all want bigger money. I think, essentially, they're on some, like, Dark Knight Returns thing. Like, oh, success has weakened you. Like, victory has defeated you. Like, that was sort of what happened to Astralis, right? I don't think they were ever counted in the game, or their players were bad or whatever. It's the only one that I don't think ever truly fell off. NIP, I think, were just way too stubborn with their style, with the exist calling style, and also thinking that, like, Get Right could be a perma lurk forever. I think they should have done a way better job with picking up the fifth player. And I think they probably should have... they either should have kept Alu and changed someone else out, maybe take Freiburg out that time, or they should have picked up a different AWPer. Let me think. Team Liquid didn't have a truly great IGL, a Garrigan, etc., and their AWPing was somewhat questionable. But I don't even think that was what did it. I think that play break just wrecked them. I think if that play break didn't happen, I don't know if they'd have won the major, but they would have been an insane favourite to win it. I thought they were an unbelievable rifle team. And by the way, when you take out all the greatest teams of all time, aside from NIP, what other team has as weak an AWPer? Even a team that has it, like, has a better IGL than Liquid. So I think truly one of the most crazy skilled teams of all time. Let's do a couple more. I think Na'Vi largely fell off, look, partly because of the conflict, but I also think the rise of FaZe was quite a key angle because Na'Vi would have won all of these big tournaments. This is the part that's whack. Are we acting like Na'Vi wouldn't have won most of the tournaments this year if FaZe wasn't so absurdly good in close games and big matches? I think Na'Vi would actually have most of the titles for this year. That'll do for now. Like I say, we can do a more in-depth one if people vote for this. I think it'd be a pretty good one to vote for. Potentially, maybe I'll make it in the first category. Barbara Stanwyck's Legs says, what are some of the times you have been most optimistic regarding esports, be it for a scene, game, project, job, etc.? Well, obviously, for many of the jobs I've taken, I've been very optimistic because I go into them in good faith. I don't do deals and jobs where I think it can't succeed for both parties. It can't succeed for them. For me, it's a general, like, synergistic relationship. So most of the things, Flashpoint, E-League, what else? Working for all these different writing websites. So there's tons of tons of different projects I've done. Obviously, this new thing I'm doing with Monty. But if you want to know, like, the main problem is this. My career is framed in a way where there were some massive, to me, clearly negative moments, even in the time they were happening, that did make esports always seem like an area that would be very cynically run and would have a lot of failure, would never live up to the billing of what they were given. Because when I joined, the dot-com bubble had just burst in the 2000s. Then you had, like, 7, 8 years later, you had the financial crash of all the housing markets and the stock market and stuff. So then all the teams again took a step back. You had CGS in the middle, which I always thought looked like a stupid gimmick. The format made no sense for TV. The way they showed it was stupid. And it was all just hopium from everyone. Oh, it's just the only way we can make it, said the Jason Licks of the world. But yeah, the finances weren't there at the time. But that was some, like, trading beans for, like a cow for some beans stuff, mate. Like, what were we thinking with that? Then, obviously, I would say probably the year I think the most optimistic in, like, CSGO has to be 2016. Because think about it, we had E-League coming along, ESL was still really good, and now I even, like, actually was working with them again. You had StarLadder was still mega. DreamHack began the Masters, so that, even though DreamHack was falling behind as a tournament, now the Masters brand came along to be a tier one premier potential prestige title. MLG was still around and did their amazing major. I think that was the best year for the majors, by the way, in terms of just overall. Epicenter started this year and was pretty good. You had the first ESL New York, which is a banger tournament with some amazing games. Coaches could talk all the time until the latter part of the year. I actually thought that revolutionized the game. And the StarX Na'Vi is one of my favorite teams to ever watch. The Team Liquid that had Peacemaker as an IGL would have been a very interesting prospect, right? International teams even started to get really interesting because Carrigan went and joined FaZe when they kicked it from Astralis. Astralis got amazing and became, well, close to the number one team, and Device was having the best year of his career. I think this Nico broke out as an incredible player. Called Zero was rocking everything. I think this was a really great year. Still had some of the best teams ever. You even had the Magic. Oh, you had so many awesome storylines here. I would say in terms of other periods, maybe the early 2010s, I thought were an amazing period because you had Brood War, top competition still, you had the top Counter-Strike 1.6 competition, and you had Quake Live 1v1. For me, this was an amazing circuit. And some of these games, Counter-Strike and Quake, would be at the same event I'd be working at, so it was awesome. Like, if you don't know, I would go to the events and meet up with, like, Robban and Face. And I would meet years later, Get Right and Forest. These were the people on my team. I'd be working at the events with Rafa. I would obviously go over and I'd be seeing all the people I knew from Quake, Cypher, and Cooler. Dude, I've roomed with Cooler. Yeah, exactly. Suck my dick. Not Cooler, obviously. And then obviously I had all the people who were Couch-Strike mates of mine, Neo, Mark Law, all these people. It was awesome. This was a really great period in time. And actually, I think a lot of people miss that period when you have the multi-games, because what's funny is everyone who didn't follow Quake, for example, would watch the Quake final because everyone respected Quake. Spirit Mano says, I started watching CSGO in late 2015 and therefore only got to see Olofmeister play in the Fnatic lineup with Dennis and beyond. Do you have any suggestions on series to watch from 2014/2015 so I can get an idea of how he played at his peak? I mean, the bad news and the good news is this. He was still technically early in 2016 If not the best player, it was between him and Guardian probably, and they were both absolutely unbelievable at the time. And I actually think, like, that kind of 18, 2016, you must have seen it, and presumably I thought he was a monster in the playoffs of that. But if we're going back to 2014, 2015, there's not that much in 2014 generally, or like the LGB era before. You don't need to worry about that. Unless you want to watch like the run at Katowice where they go to the semis in 2014. It's mainly Fnatic you want to watch. And quite frankly, in 2014 in Fnatic, it wasn't as much about him. He was more of a player. He was the B-rotator on Inferno. It was more about just having good CT sides, having a nice rifle core. At that time, it was players like Crims and JW who fragged out more. And Flusher was always a permanent mainstay at the majors. Actually, Olaf was a bit quiet at that time. Spring to summer 2015 was the prime of Olafmeister in 2015. So I would say start with the major 2015 Katowice final against NIP. He rocked that one, super close game. Gfinity Spring Masters 2 final against Virtus Pro, especially the cash game where he has an unbelievable CT side. And this is against Virtus Pro, the plow on cash, for fuck's sake. 2015 Fragbite Masters Season 4 finals, as in the LAN, where you have the four teams in the GSL style double elim. Like the upper bracket final against TSM. This is when TSM was beating them all the time. He goes absolutely bonkers on this one. You can tell it's like a revenge match. If you don't know, Olaf used to get mad triggered that TSM beat them. He was even general, even the match before that in the quarters, he was a monster. He was just really, really good at this time. Let me think. Towards the end of the year, I would say actually he had pretty good runs in the Dennis lineup as well. So, I mean, you said you saw the Dennis lineup and beyond, but this was while I was in that team. So the first tournament was obviously the Face It Stage 3 at DreamHack Winter. It was also the Richard Loader event, if people don't know. Now, in the semi-finals against Virtus Pro, he had a great series there. By the way, he was nearly always good against Virtus Pro, bizarrely. He just met their style really, really well. And then in the Fragbite Masters Season 5 finals, and generally he's pretty good across that as well. So, I think, yeah, this was a fabulous year. Look, it's not like simply, he doesn't just 1v9 every game. Like, that's not that type of a player. But this is like the best player on the best team, the most suited, the most influential. Like, it was just one of those scenarios. So I thought, yeah, it was really great to watch. Chiwa says, do you think Freak would stop casting League sometime soon? He could so easily transfer into a Twitterati and fight with the LEC players and coaches as he does anyway. Or I guess Dom is an exception, but he's hardly in the LCS ecosystem. Wonder how that could play into it. I don't think Freak will stop casting League. Here's the thing. I actually will give this to Freak. I think he genuinely enjoys League of Legends and does love it as an esport and as a game. I think he just has a different sort of tone and sensibility to people like me and Monty. I think we're a bit more serious in a way he isn't, and he's a bit more his idea of being serious is maybe a bit more like American professionalism and like TV broadcast. I think it's maybe more in that vein. I do find the character he sort of developed a bit weird. Just find it a bit weird. Like, I don't really get what he thinks he's pulling off with that character. Like, I feel like he thinks it's a lot more charismatic than it is. In terms of if he could just do, I mean, it's just a self-indulgent question. Like, no, obviously he wouldn't just go and just be on Twitter, would he? The other thing about Freak is I think he genuinely cares the most about LCS. Like, even though if he might have bigged up other regions in the past, I don't think he wants to move elsewhere. I imagine he probably likes living in LA, working for Riot and doing LCS. So it's all fine by me. Same with Jack. They're good in their own way. Pacey says, the last 3 to 4 years, LPL has been a harder league to win than LCK. Look at the depth, which, by the way, now is almost inarguable, right? Because the world champion comes from the LPL most of the times. Look at depth of talent in the league and the insanely long playoffs bracket to quantify this opinion. Why is it then that the number one LCK team has been getting predicted to win the international tournaments when LCK as a region has looked shit outside of the number one team? There's a bunch of reasons. One, obviously, it's the track records, the history, right? They just won so much in the past. Two, the absolute best Korean players still look like the best player in the world, or at minimum as good as the best Chinese players. Three, a lot of the great Chinese and LPL teams, including the ones that won Worlds, were powered by amazing Korean carries, with the exception of FPX, which is more the role players up the carries. That's, except that I guess it's questionable how much of a role player Doimby is. As a mid laner, he's a role player. As a figure, he's obviously incredibly influential. So, but I guess you could say the same about Mythy and G2, but he's still a support, isn't he? So I would say that those are major reasons. I also don't think it's wrong. Like, in theory, the absolute best Korean team, especially if it's dominant in Korea, should be at least a candidate for the best team in the world, if not the number one team for Worlds. Now, obviously, stylistically, Korea hasn't worked as well. I actually think this might be the Worlds where that turns around, though. And also, spoiler, giving some of your best stars, not giving, but having them go over to LPL is going to also hurt the LCK. Like, that's the part I've always thought was a bit unfair about these comparisons. It's not like RNG was the one winning all the worlds, was it? Bot Pound of 420. Compare and contrast the three greatest quarterbacks of all time, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, and Dan Marino. Right, first of all, obviously, that's a loaded question because he expects me to agree with the premise that those are the three greatest quarterbacks of all time. With that said, and with the caveat that obviously anything before the 2000s I have seen significantly less of, I've seen a decent amount of Dan Marino in the 90s, some in the 80s. He's actually someone I'm watching more of now and researching because I do find him very appealing to watch. And he is somewhat like you took an Aaron Rodgers and put him back in, or a Pat McCombs, put him back in a time machine and just gave him the green light. There is a bit of that. And by the way, he has to frag out essentially in terms of like putting up numbers in these games for them to have a chance. So I haven't seen as much of him. I saw pretty much all of Peyton Manning's career, and I've seen the vast majority of Aaron Rodgers' career, especially all of their best years and all the playoff games, etc. So in terms of, like, if we want to talk about greatest quarterback, as in playing the role quarterback, yeah, these probably are the three, quite frankly. As in, think of all the areas that you would contrast them. So I've put a bunch of categories. Let me think. I've got body of work, so that mainly means like eye test, like actually getting the ball, throwing the ball, making the throws, doing the correct decision. The body of work, how did you play? Not did you win or lose? What weapons did you have? If you're going to be a great quarterback, you're going to need some good weapons, right? What were your defenses like? You can't play on defense. And defense affects how good the other quarterback does. Coaches, I think coaches, it's probably the biggest sport ever for coaching. People just ignore the coach difference. Franchises, what type of franchise did he play for? Did they pay for people to join you? Spoiler, if you play for the Lions, you're going to win any Super Bowls, are you? It doesn't matter how good you are. We've seen that. You could be the absolute best individually ever at your role. The joke is there's a wide receiver and running back who arguably fit that category. Or you can even just be a really good, like well above average your whole career quarterback like Matthew Stafford. He'll never come close to a sniff of a championship. But all the morons on American TV will just say you suck and say your playoff record in an absolute sense like it was a 1v1 game. So franchise is a big deal. And then I would say this is the real test. You have to ask the person that question. If you started a franchise tomorrow and you couldn't know anything about it, how good the franchise is, who the other players are, the coaches, which player do you start at quarterback? Who do you take? So, okay, let's go through all of those. That's how I've broken it down. I'm going to start with body of work. Like, obviously, the problem here is I've seen way more of Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning than Dan Marino. I've probably seen just the best games of Dan Marino in many cases, except some of the playoff games. I maybe even skewed a bit on him, whereas I've seen all the bad games for the other two. And of the three, the ones I've seen the most of, I mean, he had the longest career and played the most games in terms of the ones I saw, was Peyton Manning. So in terms of body of work, I do think Peyton Manning has the best body of work of any quarterback ever, because I think he is just the guy where in any random scenario, you just pick a random game at any point in any career, like he's making the best throws. Remember, if people don't know, before he got his neck injury in the Colts, he had an amazing arm. It wasn't like their best arm ever. It was just like it had every single physical aspect you'd want to be able to make the smart throws. It wasn't like the guy can, like Dan Marino, the difference is Rodgers and Marino are doing the most impossible passes ever through double coverage, you know, a guy's hand in a spot that even he didn't know he could get to. That was just all that. Peyton Manning's more like he just throws the best pass and he can do really good ones. He had a really good arm back then. His decision-making was among the best. Now, sure, you might say he had some brain farts and he had a few choke moments. He had a few, but even so, like, I think if you contrast it against a lot of the other factors, some of that's overblown. So I think just in terms of the all-around factors of bodywork, Peyton Manning wins that for me. Second place is probably Aaron Rodgers. That's a tough one, though, because, again, I don't think I've seen quite enough of Dan Marino. Like, Dan Marino was making some absurd throws over and over. Like, I can't even believe some of the ones he was attempting and making. But the thing is, Aaron Rodgers also, his raw accuracy and also I just think his ability to throw the ball away is unbelievable. I think that is so underrated. People who make out, by the way, like it's fine, it's the end of the world to throw the ball away. It's better than taking a sack. It's better than throwing an int. What are you talking about? Like, I think that's massive cope. I think they have to cope like that because otherwise, if they ever have to actually process what those interception numbers mean for Aaron Rodgers, it will shatter their whole paradigm, won't it? It will invert all their hierarchy of values and they will have to acknowledge this guy was the best of his generation. Then in terms of the Dan Marino angle, again, I think he was absurdly good. I mean, these are the three best. There's not really a bad one here, is there? I would just probably rank it Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Dan Marino. Then if we go to, although I will say an underrated part about Dan Marino, his team sucked in many cases, but he was actually a very good come from behind clutch player. Aaron Rodgers is great at Hail Marys and getting you out of trouble in low time. Peyton Manning, in some ways, here's the thing, he wasn't quite as good in the playoffs because most people aren't quite as good in the playoffs. And his defense has let him down. So the problem is people don't know how good Peyton Manning is at fourth quarter comebacks, fucking game-winning drives, all that stuff. He's unbelievable. There's a reason why Bill Belichick did that like stupid fourth and yards thing, because like you sort of had to, otherwise you just give it to Peyton Manning, he'll just go the other way and score the touchdown. You feel like an idiot, won't you? So then after the body of work, we go to weapons, talking about offensive weapons here. Right, of the three, far and away, Peyton Manning had the best. Like, he at least had two people who, in their own way, were amazing fucking... I mean, if you just consider, like, the wide receivers, he had Marvin Harrison, who was over it in the playoffs, who was a monster in the regular season, and very consistent. He had Reggie Wayne to make all the crazy, like, this is like pass into double coverage type throws, like a big highlight, big game throw. He had him as well. Listen, these guys aren't still Randy Moss and Jerry Rodgers, but they're really good. And then he also did have, like, Dallas Clark as a tight end. Like, he had some good weapons. I thought his running backs were pretty good. Joseph Addai, obviously Edgerrin James. He had some good weapons, but he didn't have like unbelievable weapons. And he often also was working with like second and third tier quality outside of those major weapons. But I think of the three, he had the best weapons. Then I'm going to say... See, here's the thing. I think Aaron Rodgers had an absurdly poor set of talent around him. But he would always have at least one... good to very good, or in the case of Devontae Adams as the outlier, exceptionally good, one good wide receiver. Now, that still should be ridiculous because there's one wide receiver, got one target, but Rodgers could make it work. So, like, Jordy Nelson was pretty good. He wasn't quite as good as people made out. Obviously, Devontae Adams is a monster. There's been a few others that were pretty good. Greg Jennings was certainly a good player. These aren't like, again, Jerry Rice, fucking Randy Moss. They aren't those sorts of players, mate. They're not on that level. They're not Gronkowski, etc. So, and there's another thing. Where was Aaron Rodgers' great tight end? Where was his Gronkowski? Oh, is he supposed to beat someone who has Gronkowski in an era where he can't fucking tackle Gronkowski, but he doesn't have a Gronkowski? People are so stupid with their NFL analysis. And then Dan Marino, I think, had piss poor talent. I think he made some motherfuckers be like Hall of Fame level players, or like people thought of them as great players. I think if you take those fucking, his wide receivers and give them like a bang average quarterback, I think you'd never hear of them. I don't think they ever make any Pro Bowls, any Open. They'd have nothing like that. So I think he had the worst of all. So in that sense, I mean, by the way, that's actually the exact order I just ranked the body of work, so it probably plays a part, right? It's about who catches it as well as who throws it. Defenses. Oh, let me think. See, I feel like logically, ignoring the last season of Peyton Manning's career, we had the absurdly good defense. I think generally he had middling to bad defenses. Aaron Rodgers had a lot of bad defenses, and Dan Marino had some really bad ones consistently, but he also had a couple of years that were really good. So I think actually, maybe in theory for defense, as crazy as it sounds, I might actually have to take Dan Marino first, Peyton Manning second, and Aaron Rodgers third. Like, I think people who cite the playoff record of Aaron Rodgers, like, you just don't care about the sport. Like, let's talk about defense. If you don't want to talk about defense, don't talk about the sport, mate. It's literally a sport that defense wins championships, by the way. Coaches, again, very rarely considered. Right, if we're talking about coaches, I think on paper, Dan Marino wins that hands down, doesn't he? Like, Dan Marino had Don Shula, one of the greatest coaches of all time. Like, that is an unbelievable person who won a bazillion titles, if people don't know. Peyton Manning had... let me see. It was... Because obviously the coaches he had on the Broncos, I thought were like Gary Kubiak was pretty good. I thought John Fox was a little bit overrated. He wasn't terrible like people said, but he just only could coach one side of the ball. It felt like maybe he was a bit of a choker in his playoff decisions. Like, I think he'd made some stupid shit in the 2014 playoffs. That's the one they didn't get anything out of that they really should have. Let me think. Tony Gungy is a great coach and is a great defensive coach, and he had Peyton Manning to do the offensive side. So I think Peyton Manning's got to come second on that one. Aaron Rodgers has some absurdly bad coaches. Like, Matt LaFleur looks like he's getting to be pretty good, and he's had a great record and relationship with Aaron Rodgers. Mike, listen, here's the thing. I will never diss early Mike McCarthy. I thought he was good, and he did have the right system for some like an Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre, and he generally did some decent play calling. But I do think the last few years, he was very heavily carried by Rodgers, and he was probably a limiting factor. And I think what he's done at the Cowboys has been a bloody joke. Like, I don't know what that guy's doing. He's a guy who just doesn't know what he's doing with his career. If he just stuck to what he knew, I think he'd be half decent. In terms of the franchises they played for, let me see. I mean, it's obviously funny because no one in the modern day is going to believe the Dolphins were ever a good franchise, but obviously they'd had success, right? So in theory, in terms of the franchises, like historically, I guess it's not really about how good they were when you were there, right? So I guess, like, in theory, the Dolphins were still a good franchise when Marino was there, but you look at the pieces they got. It's like, really? I mean, they got good coaches. You also had Jimmy Johnson, by the way, later on, who was an all-time great coach. In terms of the franchise, I have to say the Colts probably were the best of these three, right? They did the best job putting people around them. If people don't know, it's an interesting detail for you. Despite all the Super Bowls won by the Patriots, the winningest team of the 2000s was the Indianapolis Colts. That is a fact. And I thought their GM, the Brian Polian guy or whatever, he did an amazing job. Like, what? That guy's one of the most underrated guys in history, just like Joe Gibbs is. There's some people who just don't get their flowers like they should. He did an unbelievable job. I notice any time the Polian guy makes a comment now, people just mock him. You idiot, you don't know anything about the NFL. Like, oh, fucking miss me, will you? You can disagree, but you don't know anything about the NFL. Bill Polian doesn't. What are you talking about? Then, I guess we're going to go, I mean, it's Sophie's choice now, isn't it? Like, here's the thing. I guess I have to go Dolphins in the sense that, like, they gave him good coaches. Aaron Rodgers didn't really get good pieces or good coaches. I think I have to go with the Packers last, right? And then if I'm starting a team tomorrow, now this is interesting because, first of all, you have to consider that Dan Marino was doing Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers stuff in the 80s with the old defensive rules. I'm not exaggerating. I think if Dan Marino played for the Kansas City Chiefs of Patrick Mahomes, Dan Marino could get 70 touchdowns. Now, listen, the reason why that might not totally work is because it's a bit like the Michael Jordan would get 50 in the NBA thing. He probably wouldn't in the sense that that's too many shots and you'd be too selfish if you did that, even if you were scoring all the time and people, if you ever lost the game, would just hate on you. So you probably wouldn't scale up that much. But in theory, we're talking about if he went for every throw and he had the pieces and the rules in the modern day, he would be untouchable, be video game numbers, mate. So you're going to think Dan Marino, actually, by the way, should at least be shaded in as a potential candidate here. But if I am picking, it has to be the other two. Because Peyton Manning, I'm basically picking, if you want all the skills of a quarterback, this is probably the best. Like, I mean, people said it best. It's like having you're cheating because you've got your offensive coordinator on the actual pitch. And Aaron Rodgers, I think, is just the most skilled quarterback to ever play. It's only Dan Marino, I think, can truly contest him. He is absurdly efficient. Again, the problem with him is I haven't seen him with all the weapons. Like, part of me feels like if Aaron Rodgers had Randy Moss and then Gronkowski, and I think at that point in time, maybe Aaron Rodgers is just the GOAT in every sense. Maybe I would just be picking him. Maybe it would look even better. So that's a tough one in that sense. So I guess overall, I'm going in the order you actually put them yourself. I'm going Peyton Manning number one, Aaron Rodgers number two, Dan Marino number three. By the way, just in terms of overall career, like career accomplishments, it probably goes in that order again, right? Because Manning has the rings and the MVPs. Aaron Rodgers has technically the same number of like really good rings, the rings and the MVPs. Dan Marino has like some MVPs. In fact, does he even have more than one MVP? Let me have a look on that one. I feel like he must only have one MVP, logically, right? Let's go back to the 80s. Dan Marino won the MVP in 1984. And then that's it. Man alive. That already feels like a travesty right there, mate. That's just a problem with people refusing to acknowledge what an amazing team Joe Montana had around him, right? I'm going to guess if you go like 1990 or something, it probably should be Marino again. Man alive. At least they started giving out the MVP legit to the 2000s and 2010s though. Right, Bot Powder 420, another question. You get, by the way, he submitted a load here because actually a lot of people just didn't submit that many questions since the last one. I don't know if they got confused by the thread or what. You get to make one rule / gameplay change to the NBA and the NFL. What are they? Right, in the NBA, if I can only do one, it's very simple. This is the one reason that I don't actually like as much to watch the NBA now, and I just watch specific teams. It's the gather step. So it's James Harden. I would remove the gather step and all that bullshit where you can have your hand under the ball. Nah, I ain't doing that. Or on the side of the ball. I would get rid of that completely. You're not allowed that. There's no taking the three steps back. None of that. If you do the Euro step, you better do it legit. You better do it like old school Ginobili. If you just do... By the way, there's another thing. When you all tell me how godlike Giannis is, I don't want to see people just running with the ball held up and slamming it, mate. There's a lot of great players in the 70s and 80s would have dominated if they were allowed to do that. They had to actually use real footwork. You know when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would turn and go to do a skyhook? Sometimes when he turned like that, that was an offensive foul. In the modern day, that's a foul on the defense. Like... That stuff kills me. By the way, go watch this rule about rule changes over the years. So the NBA is an easy one. For the NFL, it would just generally be defensive tackling rules. Like, basically, I would make it... I would just say, have a look at this video, NFL. This is 2000s Ray Lewis. All the things he is doing in the middle of the field, he should be allowed to do in 2022. Because, spoiler, I actually do think... that one of the things that has ruined the game for defensive teams that were amazing is that you've making it so that it's so hard to have a lockdown defense. You have to have more like a bend but don't break defense. And then secondly, I think the main position that it has ruined in the NFL is the tight end. Do you think it's a coincidence? This is the era of all the tight ends just popping off. You know, yeah, you had like an all-time great 2000s one in Anthony Gonzalez. But then you think it's a coincidence. Then you have Gronk as well. And then comes Kelsey and then Kittles. And it just never stops. They're all just keeping coming. Yeah, it's because the position's OP now. Because now you're just the taller, stronger guy. You have your hands over the top of the defender and you catch the ball. You know the reason you didn't used to do that in the past? Because when you tried that, Ray Lewis took your head off. A whole bunch of people just smashed into you and you were donezo. They were wrecking your legs all the time and you were just going to, you'd have a career that was half as long as some of these guys do. People like Anthony Gonzalez were true monsters. People like Gronk were monsters, but then they got inflated as well. And then the modern day people is just out of control completely. Like the joke is, even though he had like probably the fastest wide receiver in the NFL, it actually did make way more sense for Patrick Mahomes, like a video game, to just spam the same move and throw to his tight end, just like Tom Brady did with Gronk. Like, that's ridiculous to me. I want to see how truly great these guys are. Stop giving them the fucking rules to help them. It's like that. It's like that. Wilt Chamberlain once said one of the most gangster things ever to Michael Jordan. Spoiler: Michael Jordan was probably salty at the time, but I'm sure he would now say it to Steph Curry. It's like, mate, they had to make rules to stop me dominating. They made rules to make you dominate. That's what you need to know about that. Then, because by the way. I know people are just going to get triggered by my things. I mean, the taunting rules, like, look, that is totally stupid. But I'd fundamentally like the game to be better, even if you can taunt or not. Another butt pounder question. What movie, book, TV episode, etc. hit you or hits you hardest in the feels? Okay, I've got some good ones for you. I could probably make a good side channel video about this, by the way. Like a classic one would have to be the movie Gattaca. Like, it's basically, there's a key moment about two thirds of the way through the movie. There's actually a whole bunch in this one, even that one about like his heart, but you know, you only had this many beats. There's so many moments in that movie that are so poignant, so beautifully done. They're not maudlin, they're not kind of cynical, they're just really well executed. There's so many great moments in that one. Look, in the movie, it was well done as well, but obviously I'm going to go with the comic book / graphic novel. I would have to say in V for Vendetta, I think there's not only a bunch of really key moments, but there's an amazing sequence, I won't give any more context, where you'll just know it's when it's the speech called I Had Roses. There you go. There's one. If you wanted like a TV episode, I mean, I've cited it in the past, I did a Thorn Side video on it. It's the Game of Thrones season one episode, what would it be? I think 9, because that was when they started the penultimate one is the big cliffhanger. It was obviously the one where Ned Stark gave the I grew up with soldiers speech. That one. Just an amazing one again. Did a video about it. Couldn't be in the book, but I thought in the 1949 movie, it was very well done. It's the scene in The Fountainhead, by the way, what an incredibly inspirational movie in general. It's in The Fountainhead where, again, without spoilers, the woman is talking to this big, like, media mogul figure. And she basically just tells him, she explains basically that he cannot break this man. Like, that, I fuck with that so heavy because that is who I am. Like, listen, I can be beaten in theory. I can lose. I cannot get what I want. You can call me all, you can hurt my feelings. You can fuck with my life. You can ruin my, you can do all these things. But here's the thing, you'll never break me. You'll never break me. That is literally the foundation I am based on. And this is again, if you look at the way this guy refuses to be broken, it's why I actually think it's an insane counter signal when people either haven't read Ayn Rand and they say she's shit, or they, even worse, they have and they say the writing's shit, the story's garbage, and it's all just like for fascism, you were a fool. That's an insane counter signal, but I love that you counter signal. Please counter signal more like that so I know to just stay the fuck away from you. In the same way as if you thought Trump wasn't in any way funny or ever amusing and you had to lie about everything he said or did, that was a brilliant counter signal that you're a piece of shit and that I don't want you anywhere near me or anything to do with integrity or the truth. Another great one. Or if you think Jordan Peterson is a literal Nazi, if you really believe that, like, we don't even have to have a convo, you were a fucking cretin on a knuckle-dragging level. And then finally, I'd say just generally it's the whole movie, but it was the movie The Fountain. I think it's one of the most beautiful stories ever told. Yams in a can. What rule adjustments would you make to the NBA? So we had this one before, but I'll do more. He says, seems like you are not a fan of the current defensive rules. Spoiler, almost every sport has been ruined defensively, as far as I can tell. Except the joke would be tennis, where if anything, defense is too strong. But that's mainly to do with the court and the tech of the rackets. By the way, spoiler, I would change the courts in tennis immediately, but they won't do that, sadly. Not least because they want fucking people like Nadal Djokovic to win everything. So if we're going with defensive rules, I mean, spoiler, I'm really just going to revert a lot of them. But if you've never heard them, it'll be fresh to you. So here's one. Immediately, hand-checking gets to return. Spoiler, if you've ever seen those movies, it's even famously a movie like in Finding Forrester, a classic scene where just like you show the woman how to play a pool, but really it's sort of a sexual thing because you're kind of mounting her from behind. Same thing, you show a woman like, oh, but if I have my hand on your waist, no matter where you move, I can see where you go. That's what people like Michael Jordan were doing all day long. Do you have any idea, if hand-checking was allowed, how actually dominant people like Kobe would have been as two-way players? Like, it would have been fucking nuts, mate. If you know hockey, he would have basically had the best offense, but he also would have had like the Sidney Crosby like 2010s defense. Like, this would have been fucking nuts. He would have locked people. He would have won so many more MVPs, I'm telling you right now. But essentially, just became an offensive game, didn't it? I would remove the restricted area. I've always thought that's stupid as fuck. Like, oh, you can just do anything you want once you pass this line. Who's made that rule up? Again, I want people to score from skill, mate. If you get the ball down low and we've surrounded you, we've got our hands over you like that, tough shit. Better pass it out then, aren't you? The fuck? Not only are you invalidating the great players of all, but you're just making the sport bad. What are you teaching kids? Oh, is it too hard? Just make it easier so you can pump your numbers up, rookie. Then I'd say, get rid of all that shit where the offensive player leans in or intentionally just brushes his hand through yours. If you do that on purpose, you lost the ball. Tough shit. I didn't make you do that, dickhead. You came into my space. That has to be a principle. Otherwise, how can you play defense? That's one of the things that's so whack. Like, even though they're right that people are whack on defense and other and don't try, there's a lot of people just save energy, like fucking Melo and Harden and Westbrook and all these guys. Even so, let's be real, Scottie Pippen will foul out of a game in one quarter if he played now, doing all the amazing shit he did in the 90s. Like, we've got to have the chance to play defense again. Like I said, I would remove the gather step. And then, oh, one last one. I would call travels. Here's the thing you don't know. 99% of those amazing handles moves that you all think of the shit, there would just be a travel. It is a travel. And also, if you're a superstar player, they just don't call travels on you because they don't want you to foul out the game. Like, it's just bullshit. I don't want it to be like 1950 or 1960, but like, at least give me like the fucking 70s or 80s. And don't find one video. It's what they love to do. It's like, they'll go and find like one video of Michael Jordan playing against like not a very good defense. You see all the defense is sucked in the 90s. Like, nah, fuck you. So then I'd remove all that stuff. Now, I don't care if that means the viewership will go down. I ain't here for viewership. I even think the early 2000s period when you had all those like 80-point games was amazing. Even if it was, boring to you guys. I thought it was fucking sick. What are you talking about? It was real defense being played between the Spurs and the Pistons and the Pacers. That was a real era. Bash. Who do you believe is the true author of Shakespeare? Edward de Vere, Francis Bacon, Shakespeare himself, other, or perhaps all? Right, a key problem with this question is this. This is basically why Joe Rogan experience on these topics never is that interesting. And if you think it is, you're literally like somebody who's eaten plain crackers your whole life and someone just basically just gave you one with like, what, a piece of salami. And you're like, oh my God, the flavor! Oh, it's like... No, you've just lived an impoverished life, mate. You'll never get anywhere close to a really deep topic in that particular domain. So the problem is, and it's why I say that, you can't talk about these things publicly. The most important and interesting questions, by definition, are verboten to be discussed. Now, yes, I could still discuss it in a special coded way, but you're not going to be able to get it because you're asking me to literally say the name of this person. And because here's the problem, you're going to think just like all the ones you're allowed to talk about, Bigfoot and flying saucers and the Loch Ness Monster. The reason you're allowed to talk about those is they're inherently silly, whether they're real or not. And in fact, the whole point of them is, well, does it matter if they're real? Whereas the really deep things that you're going to go, what does it matter if that's real? That, everything. They were literally created and hidden and done this way to completely change your paradigm of life and reality and where you live itself. Like, essentially, if you want the ultimate breadcrumb, you have to look at the reality they've psyoped people into believing of, like, where they are, how they came to be, what sort of a general space they are in, what sort of a cosmology they have, what life is about, what history was, who controls things, who are we as beings, what can we be, what is possible, what are the dynamics of nature, what are the different mechanisms that can be used to create things, get energy. If all these things, basically, what you actually need to ask yourself is this: not only do you need to question all of them if you want to find the truth, but more importantly, this is the key thing to ask: what purpose spiritually does it serve for me to believe the psyop? Because that's the actual secret, as far as I can tell. It's that. I'll give you a very brief example without going deep. Essentially, if you convince someone that the topic of abortion, for example, that it's totally fine and it's a convenience and a healthcare matter as to whether you choose to have a child or not, you now enable spiritually a form of child sacrifice to be approved and allowed by the state. It might even be encouraged and praised. That's going to have a spiritual effect on your soul and who you are and what your spiritual hierarchy of values is. Like things like that, where you exist, how long did it take to get all those things? Again, that's the thing you don't get, because the real genius is that impact is going to inform your values and who you are. And more importantly, it's actually on some low level. They are making you part of their outer church, as it were. That's enough said about that. Basically, you don't think this topic, you think it's just a funny, who was it who did that? There could potentially be much more significance and importance behind this actual topic than you maybe realize. So, first of all, spoiler, I think potentially any stuff, especially from before my lifetime, could be faked, maybe was faked. I think a lot of history is not as it's told. I think a lot of historical figures are told for certain effect and to teach certain things and to put certain patterns in your mind and to scare you off things and to make you believe certain things. You know, this guy was a hero when he wasn't. This guy was a villain, all that jazz. So the short answer is this: that's not a topic I've gone super deep on, specifically the Shakespeare authorship. Like, I've heard many different theories on them, a lot of them quite good. I would say one angle you haven't gone with there is, I think the angle is maybe if he was involved, if like John Dee was involved, or the establishment was involved. That's a pretty cool angle to go down. All I would say is this: from the Shakespeare angle, to make it still an interesting answer, I'll say this. I actually think Shakespeare, whoever wrote them, did drop one of the greatest breadcrumbs of all time, because this breadcrumb is one you can keep coming back to, and it becomes imbued with more and more meaning. But what's great is when I say it, just like every esoteric secret, you're going to see the literal reality. You're going to go one level deep for a metaphor, and most of you are going to bail and go, well, that's what it actually, what it means is, and you all think there's one meaning, and I found out from the author what the meaning. There's actually more layers, in my opinion, that get uber profound. So it's the quote from, what is it from? Actually, let me just double check, because I want to make sure. What was it? Was it from Twelfth Night or something? What was that from? Oh, it's actually from his comedy As You Like It. It's the famous quote that goes, "All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts." Now, I'll give you your little breadcrumb. The breadcrumb is someone's going to go, now, what that means, you see, is that's an excellent metaphor for a man's life and his social persona. What happens is, you know, through his life, he plays many roles. He's a boy, he's a student, he is you know, a suitor, he is a husband, he is a father, he is an elder statesman, he is a veteran, he is a mentor. And also, you know, they come and they go, like, you know, life, You come in, you play those roles also, you're born, you die. Listen, there's something to that, but it's a simplistic reading. All I'll say is this. I think there is a much more deeper esoteric meaning and even potentially literal meaning, but I cannot get into it because there's so many background things you'd have to build up first. Essentially, if you ever get there, you'll know why that breadcrumb was fire. Bash says, how much does Steph's finals MVP mean to you in regards to his legacy? Did he need this? Probably did need it quite a lot because he didn't have any finals MVPs, right? I'd have to say, when I go back and look, there's no way Andre Iguodala should have won the MVP, in my opinion, in 2015. I think if you go and watch those finals, the numbers alone, if you have to give it to a winner player, means Steph Curry is the MVP, even if he didn't play dominant basketball. That's not what even the... Where did that myth come from? Like, it's like Michael Jordan ruined the fucking NBA because he made people think it's a one-person sport. You're so dumb. It's not like that. Then you can have... Like, obviously, the other candidate should be LeBron. It's just that he shot so fucking badly and was so whack in some of the later parts of those games. I can't abide by it, mate. Like, I thought some of the players he was playing against, he should have just shredded, mate. So I thought he did also play quite badly because he knew he didn't have enough good pieces around him. So I don't hate it if you give him the MVP as well. Just he did shoot fucking appallingly. Let me think. Obviously, the Durant ones, I mean, I've pointed out in the past, I do think Kevin Durant sort of cocked Steph Curry, even if Steph Curry, by the way, was also key to running the team and off-ball play and all that jazz. And yeah, it's all great. So I think Steph Curry did need one or needed like a big finals performance. Here's the thing as well. People make out like he played like in 2015 in every finals. No, especially like in the last finals. He was looking way better. He was looking really good. So I think in general, he was always pretty good. He couldn't have done anything in the Toronto one, even though he was having some bad games occasionally. Basically, it's 2015 and Game 7 of 2016. That's all everyone who hates Steph Curry pretends like his whole career is. He already was a really great player. He'd already done a lot of great things. I don't even care about the whole thing. He'd be in the clutch. Like, so what? He's one of the greatest front runners of all time. That's allowed too. So I would say it helped quite a lot. I mean, even a detail people won't realise is everyone now will come. It was like split predictions going in, you wanker. And also, when you got the conference finals, I had loads of people predicting the Celtics. I thought the Celtics would win at that point in time. I didn't know Tatum was going to play like a bomb in the final. Kill your inner loser. Whose work ethic do you respect more, Simples or Carrigan's? The problem with that is they're totally different. Like, it's very different to be like, playing and practicing technique and every little detail of the game, that's really hard, but it's also it's almost like a mental challenge differently to study the demos and think about the player. That one's almost more philosophical almost. The other one's more like becoming amazingly worked out in the gym and having like, you know, being able to like sprint, but run long distance and do hurdles and do the ropes and swim and fucking bike and triathlon. Like that's more like what, doing the simple side is. So in theory, I guess it's simple because I don't know if anyone's ever worked harder than them for as long. But then again, Carrigan's longevity is unbelievable. And the fact that he still goes as hard now is really impressive. So it'd have to probably be Simples. Captain Confused, what was a fun idea for a skit for an event you had to cancel because of budget, profanity or something else? Right, there's never anything because of profanity. There's definitely plenty of things that were skits that got cancelled. The problem is it's going to be hard to recall them now. Like at Flashpoint, you can imagine I threw loads of ideas out there. The problem was the way we generally worked at Flashpoint, spoiler, I know people think you shouldn't say these things publicly, but they're not secrets. And also, credit where credit's due. And by the way, if you notice on those Flashpoint skits, they wouldn't put who wrote the script and stuff like that, which is a bit bullshit, but whatever. I mean, I know I could have made them do it, but I was on it. It was actually, we were mostly doing those on very short turnaround. I would say, first of all, I wrote most of those intros and skits, the majority of them. And then even the ones where other people contributed lines and stuff, when I got to the set, I usually went along with them and I rewrote a lot of the, any of them that I was in, I rewrote most of the lines of the other person and me, or just made them funnier in the moment or not. And basically one of the reasons those skits were great is because Tom Newman, the guy who was the one behind the camera, the producer, oh, he wasn't the one behind the camera, he's the producer, me and him just had a really good rapport of like making the lines, workshopping them to get them funnier and funnier and funnier. And then also he has a similar view to me of comedic timing. And then we would also then coach the others to be good. So the problem was, the main way we would do it was I would throw loads of ideas out there. We'd workshop them a bit. And if enough people agreed, we'd do the idea with those people who agreed as part of it. And if they didn't, like if everyone shot my idea down, some of those just went into the bin. So like, spoiler, I'll give you an example. I did pretty much every idea in that. Well, I think it's that banging Freya one where she's like the news reporter and has all those hilarious jokes like about Astralis is going to like make an academy team so they can issue like jerseys to children at birth so they have them on contracts and stuff. Oh, there's loads of angles on that, mate. The one about where Dignitas players do the old football one, they go to the orphanage and then, you know, it's terrible to see no hope whatsoever in their faces, said Pierre, aged eight. Like, you know, the old switcheroo. The Uno reverse card. Yeah, there's loads in that particular sequence. I had a lot of other edgy ones that they shaded out a little bit because they were like, oh, I don't want to upset people's feelings. So they had a couple that they took out like that I thought were fire, but they just got a little bit butthurt about or whatever. So it's whatever in it. Jaho, were you ever interested in Defrag? Right, this is going to be complicated because you haven't explained what Defrag is. So Defrag is basically, it's like a mod for Quake 3 where basically you go into maps, often custom maps, and you're just trying to do like, you're trying to do stuff like rocket jumps off walls to get to places, and you're just trying to show all like trick jumps basically and exploit the movement of the game. No, not really. I've seen a few movies that were all right, but generally I never found that interesting. Not least because I thought the air movement was whack compared to Quake World and Quake. I never knew the obsession with Quake 3. It was just your first Quake, you twats, wasn't it? It just was. That's obviously why you all loved it. I actually thought speed running was the more interesting angle. I like to watch those ones. Thought that a lot of those movies were really good, and usually also had like electronica slash IDM slash drum and bass soundtracks, which I enjoy. KeyRay157 says, "What would you say has been the biggest change in the way you have modelled players within League, so League of Legends, from the earlier seasons to now? And is there any earlier pros that this has caused you to think of as greater or lower in estimations?" Right, we'll have to do that part separately. So in terms of like how I modelled, I would say when I started, it was more like I was doing like just the best player in the role, and then I would scram them together, which is pretty simplistic because obviously they might not fit together. I also think I did have a fairly reductive idea of carry balance. Like back then, I mean, look, I was at least one of the first people to figure out you have like two carries and someone has to be a tertiary, which obviously now is called weak side. But back then, that wasn't as understood. People would just make three carry lanes, basically. So I think I already got that. I think I was already ahead of them in that regard. But I had to even level that part up as well. Because I also then had to look, like, I'll give you an example. I actually thought the elements with Froggen and Reckless would work. When I look back now, since the top lane was an issue, then actually Froggen and Reckless are two similar players. You would actually want to have like Froggen and Forgiven, or you'd want to have like Reckless and Xpeki. Those make sense in terms of their styles, and that's the point. So aggression balance is what I came up with, a la that in that regard. How defensive are you? How passive are you? I would say mentality balance. You want some players that are aggressive and talk a lot, some that aren't as much. Leadership balance. Who are the leaders? Who are the followers? If you have too many leaders, it might not work. If you have too many followers, it won't work. Style and identity. It's not enough to just have good players and even have a good setup and all those other balances. You've got to also have a coherent style. Like, you know what? Say what you like. They weren't a good team, but Astralis had a coherent style in LEC. Misfits had a coherent style in LEC. There were top teams that didn't. Vitality and Fnatic looked lost most of the split with much better players. And then finally, I would say, it's like that whole concept I have of like the people who just know how to win. There are players that are good skilled, that are good laners, that are very strong at their role, but there are players who might not be as strong in all those regards, but are smarter and are just winners. They know how to win the game. So in terms of if I go back, what players that level up in that regard? I actually think the more I go back, I think Soaz just gets better and better and better and better and better. Because his thing back then, he was also just an amazing player in general. But I think his value becomes absurd. It's why I actually do think he is like, he's easily one of the five best Western players to ever play League of Legends, in my opinion. And he's a real candidate for number one, even though other people are going to disagree. Just about his role, longevity, how he played it, what he contributed, what he brought to the team, what he brought to shot calling, winners mentality, everything. So Soaz would be one. In terms of other ones who would be greater, let me think. Who else would be greater? Who actually gets better because of all those factors? I think like a classic one is who gets greater? Because the problem is all the shot callers had very good reps actually. So who's like an underrated player maybe who gets better in this regard? That's a tough one, actually. It's actually tough to find players I think I underrated or that I got like a special appreciation for. I didn't have as much now. I would say in terms of players that go lower though in my estimations, The problem is Reckless got better as a player, so it's not really fair to say he got lower. But I would say as I added some of these factors, it maybe reduced some of his superstar power. Do maybe one more. I actually always thought Caps was slightly overrated until 2020, because first of all, there was the craps games. I also think he played in a super abusive way in terms of like, he was a bit like Humanoid, where he would just like gamble, not flash in, and he would let himself die in lane in a silly way. And also, I didn't think he had like the shot calling and leadership angle. I think it just his movements on the map and roaming allowed people to infer like a shot call, but I don't think they were any in the same way. So I think he was a different player back then, and he did need some of those other players around him. Yeah, there we go. Right, Zumba. Was there ever a play done in any game in esports where it genuinely shocked you that it was possible? If so, what were the most memorable or more memorable ones? Yeah, of course there were. Like, not entirely. Like, look, once I've seen a bazillion games, obviously I have an insane concept of what's possible. But in terms of, like, how did he do that? Wow, I can't believe that just happened. Like, look, a ridiculous one would even be, like, it's not that it's impossible. But just like that Chris J one in, like, the ESL New York 2018 final on Mirage from the triple box to the connector. That ace against it, that is unbelievable. Like, that's even the idea it's the fifth map of a best of five grand final. Like, that is ridiculous on stage, everything. But some classic ones, Simple versus Fnatic 1v2 on Cash in the semi final of ESL One Clone 2016. That was a map where, in any other normal game, any other normal player, Fnatic actually just wins that map, probably wins the third map, wins the game, goes to the final, plays SK. That was like he broke the matrix. I remember seeing it live and just being like, that's impossible. And then what's ridiculous is, because you didn't see the POV, you thought, ah, it probably just looks way better on the POV. It looked really ridiculous on the POV. I remember someone getting it and putting the box on the second no-scope. The box is like that big and he has to hit someone like there. It's ridiculous. I would have to say some of the rails and the general game that Cypher played, his defensive chess match on Aero Walk at the QuakeCon 2010 finals against Cooler. Again, Cooler just wins that game against any other player ever in history. Maybe even Cypher on a different day. That was a miracle. I don't know how he just walked on water that day. And then a classic one from Brood War would be the game. I forget what tournament it's in. I think it might have been either a World Cyber. I think it was a World Cyber Games qualifier. So let's say maybe 2009 or 2010, I'm going to guess. If this is right, I've got a mega memory. And it was where Bisu had that God tier Dragoon micro against Flash's Vultures and the Mines. And by the way, Flash was Vulture, was micro and the Vultures insanely well. And Bisu was just unbelievable. Like, this is some of the craziest micro you'll ever see in your entire life. And multitasking, by the way, he's multitasking while he was doing that. Last question. Kova says, I'm currently watching UFC. I shouldn't say which one, actually. Well, it was the Adesanya Cannonier. Well, it's not that bad, actually. Do you watch any MMA events live on pay-per-view? Yes, sometimes. I still prefer to watch VODs because it's like 4 in the morning usually for me. And also, sometimes fights are boring. I want to skip through or I want to skip ahead or I want to see just the finish. Do you consume any side content from analysts slash fighters revolving MMA? Sometimes watch Chael Sonnen's videos. I don't really watch any of the like interviews and media generally now. I like when Dana White does the scrums. I like the post-game press conference. I like the UFC's content. I like the embedded, the countdowns. I think they do a really good job with. I'm mainly in this sport watching the big fights or following certain fighters. Like sometimes I watch an old great fighter if they're still around, like I know Korean Zombie or yeah, those sorts of players. Gormi when he was around, those sorts of people. Aoki. And I also will just watch the old boomers, like Fedor fights, I'll watch again. If Krokop fights, if Chael fights, Rampage. Look, the Rampage ones have got insane diminishing returns at this point, but I'll still watch just for interest value, right? Yeah, there we go. Let's get another one done soon. The thread's in the description box below. Again, if you're a past patron, you can also submit some. This video was kindly supported by Kill Your Inner Loser, Ahmed Haju, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Paul Villa, Travis Goff, Adam Oaks, Animosity, Bot Pounder 420, Hades, Jensen Gore, Kovacevic, Pacey, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and as always, special thanks goes out to Jerky's Minion. Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my shows? Would you like to ask a question in my Patreon AMA? Maybe you want teasers, find out who the next Reflections guests are or upcoming talk show guests. Do you want to take part in one of those long donator discussions with me? Well, if any of the above or more sound interesting to you, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.
Thank you.